Okay. Bit of a novelty? First time in 2 years?
Fresh exhortation.
So I've been listening to podcasts recently from the Bible Project, and it's a series on how to read the Bible, and specifically on what they've been calling design patterns in biblical narrative. And the last in the series that I listened to was one that I really enjoyed, and I thought I'd share with you my main takeaway from it. You may possibly have come across the theme previously, but I don't think I'd ever heard it in this combination before. So it's a topic that starts all the way back in Genesis in chapter 1. We read, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness covered the surface of the watery depths, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the waters. Then God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness." So what we have in these couple of verses is a combination of water, God, and light. And the next time we see this combination, it's probably slightly more obvious. It's in Genesis chapter 6. Now, God remembered Noah, as well as all the wildlife and all the livestock that were with him in the ark. God caused a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters began to subside. The sources of the watery depths and the floodgates of the sky were closed, and the rain from the sky stopped. Now, if we move over to Genesis chapter 9. "Then God said to Noah and his sons with him, 'Understand that I am confirming my covenant with you and your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, birds, livestock, and all wildlife of the earth that are with you, all the animals of the earth that came out of the ark. I confirm my covenant with you that never again will every creature be wiped out by the waters of a flood. There will never again be a flood to destroy the earth.' And God said, 'This is the sign of the covenant I am making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all future generations. I have placed my bow in the clouds, and it should be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I form clouds over the earth and the bow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all the living creatures. Water will never again become a flood to destroy every creature. The bow will be in the clouds, and I will look at it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all the living creatures on earth.' God said to Noah, 'This is the sign of the covenant that I have confirmed between me and every creature on earth.'" So the first parallel we saw there with Genesis chapter 1 was God moving over the face of the waters and God causing a wind to pass over the waters. And then in Genesis 9 we have that combination of water and light creating the rainbow as the sign of the promise that he would never again flood the whole earth. The next example is a little more complicated and probably one where we won't notice the thread quite so much. The firstborn of Egypt have been killed, and the Israelites have been pushed out of the land as fast as they could be made to go. And then, at the beginning of Exodus chapter 14, we read, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, 'Tell the Israelites to turn back and camp in front of Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. You must camp in front of Baal Zephon, facing it by the sea.'" So the first thing that we notice here is that it is God who sets up this scenario. He wants Pharaoh to think that Israel have been boxed in and will be easy prey. And as we well know, Pharaoh jumps at the bait. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up and saw the Egyptians coming after them. Then the Israelites were terrified and cried out to the Lord for help. The salvation is not immediate, though. It seems that we've hit the end of the day when the Egyptians catch up to Israel. Then the angel of God, who was going in front of the Israelite forces, moved and went behind them. The pillar of cloud moved from in front of them and stood behind them. It came between the Egyptian and Israelite forces. The cloud was there in the darkness, yet it lit up the night. So neither group came near the other all night long. So it's dark out, and that is when the process begins. Once again, we see the wind. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. The Lord drove the sea back with a powerful east wind all that night and turned the sea into dry land. So the waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with the waters like a wall to them on their right and on their left. So the implication here is that Israel start their crossing in the morning. God has once again divided the water as he did in creation, as well as separating the light from the darkness, and he uses this process to provide salvation to his people. We find a similar combination when they come to enter the promised land in Joshua chapter 3. Joshua started early the next morning and left the acacia grove with all the Israelites. They went as far as the Jordan and stayed there before the crossing. This time, instead of a wind, we have a more physical representation of the presence of God, as it is the Ark of the Covenant, which is to go across the river in front of them. Joshua told the people, "Consecrate yourselves, because the Lord will do wonders among you tomorrow." Then he said to the priests, "Take the Ark of the Covenant and go ahead of the people." So they carried the Ark of the Covenant and went ahead of them. The following morning, the wonders happen, as Joshua says that they will. Then Joshua told the Israelites, "Come closer and listen to the words of the Lord your God." He said, "You will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly dispossess before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites and Jebusites, when the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth goes ahead of you into the Jordan. Now choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one man for each tribe. When the feet of the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, come to rest in the Jordan's waters, its waters will be cut off. The water flowing downstream will stand up in a mass." We know that the water stopped flowing into the Dead Sea and retreated to a place known as Adam. So once again, we see God, a sunrise, and the waters. Another, perhaps, non-obvious allusion to this theme is found for us in Judges chapter 6 with the account of Gideon. Gideon is looking for confirmation that salvation will be wrought through him with God on his side. Then Gideon said to God, "If you will deliver Israel by my hand, as you said, I will put a fleece of wool here on the threshing floor. If dew is only on the fleece and all the ground is dry, I will know that you will deliver Israel by my strength, as you said." And that is what happened. When he got up early in the morning, he squeezed the fleece and wrung dew out of it, filling a bowl with water. Gideon then said to God, "Don't be angry with me. Let me speak one more time. Please allow me to make one more test with the fleece. Let it remain dry and the dew be all over the ground." That night, God did as Gideon requested. Only the fleece was dry and dew was all over the ground. Once again, we see the work of God in the early morning and the separation involving water. So, what do we see from all of this? Where does it point to for us? We are always very quick to draw the allusion to baptism when the separating of the waters, and that's of course correct. But there are other associations and themes that are relevant too. Even at Jesus' baptism, we see the allusions back to creation. After Jesus was baptized, he went up immediately from the water, the heavens suddenly opened for him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and coming down to him. And there came a voice from heaven, "This is my beloved Son, I take delight in him." As in creation, we have the Spirit of God moving over water, but this time, instead of the separation of light from dark in a physical sense, we have the declaration that this was his Son, through whom salvation would be brought to all. And finally, we come to the main reason for our hope, the resurrection of the dead. It is in our baptism and the emblems before us on the table that these themes come together. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they could go and anoint him. Very early in the morning, on the first day of the week, they went to the tomb at sunrise. They were saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone from the entrance to the tomb for us?" Looking up, they observed that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. And when they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a long white robe sitting on the right side. They were amazed and alarmed. And so it was that at sunrise, they came to find that the tomb is empty. It took them a while to realize, but once again, we see God bringing of salvation at sunrise in the raising of his Son from the dead. An act we commemorate each week in the partaking of the emblems before us on the table, after each one of us has been pulled from the water, tying together that pattern set for us in the very beginning.